This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Jinira Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Bula to all our Fijian listeners and welcome everyone to Neat and Footy, the go-to place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Tinirau Arona and alongside me each week is my koi, Sammy Wykes. Sammy, welcome to Neat and Footy Mondays.
Malola Lee. How good was the footy on the weekend? And NRL, you can't pick it. You absolutely can't pick any type of winners out there.
Oh, yeah,
so many upsets.
Awful, mate.
Well, mine is better this year, so I'm not complaining too much. But hey, what a show we've got planned. Moana Pacifica. How good were they getting their massive win over the Crusaders? We'll talk about NRL round five, few upsets, as we said, and Super W, the regular season, rounded up, and it's finals time in that competition.
Well, speaking of Super W, we have a guest each Monday, and today's guest is a Cook Island.
Fellow Cook Islander, yes.
Super W and Australia Rugby Union player, Ash Masters. I want to say a big thank you, Sammy, because you've done the heavy lifting on this one while I was travelling up in
Townsville. Just this one time I've done the heavy lifting.
This one interview. So I was away on a work trip up at Townsville, and Ash Masters was available, and Sammy got to do this interview. How did the interview go?
A fantastic chat with Ash Masters. I really enjoyed it because of the fact that she's a front row or hooker in rugby union, and she managed to get out of the FRU, which is the front rowers union, the front row club, and managed to get into the back row, into the back line, then back in the back row. And I feel like, yeah, just her straight up personality, there's a reason why that she's been one of the best for the Wallaroos.
34 appearances for the Wallaroos?
I'm pretty sure, 34, yeah.
35.
Wallaroo number 117. Oh, if that's my memory, I've killed it there.
What Super W clubs?
Melbourne Rebels and now at the Western Force.
At the Force.
And hey, some stay around because some really cool moments with her old man. Or cool moments or standard
cool
Islander Dad. Yeah, Islander Dad moments.
Moment of the week.
Yes, each week we start our Neat and Footy Monday show with our moment of the week, something that's caught our eye over the weekend or the previous week. Now, this weekend, yes, the Moana Pacifica had a huge win against the Crusaders in Christchurch.
You notice I've jumped on the bandwagon too? I've got the shirt on?
Yeah, you wear that every Monday.
Every Monday, yes, I do.
But you mentioned off-air, Sam, the... was it Auckland? It took a while for Auckland to win a game in Christchurch?
Yeah, it would. And I'm going to go through that in the rugby review. But it's a special moment to win down in Christchurch. I never got that at all when playing over there. I think I had 5 trips to the Crusaders. Christchurch didn't happen. But special win. And I thought, T, this will be our moment. How good's a team song, especially when you're the underdogs? How good is it? And I feel like the Moana Pacifica team song is up there with one of the best. That is Stomp the Yard. So like a bit of the theming of their song. They've taken bits from famous movies and other songs as well. You just hear them.
Still going.
Some of them are wearing sunglasses as well. You just hear them going off. You can just hear in their voices how much it meant to the team to win this game and sing that song, especially at the end. Their song is, remember the artist Savage?
Yeah, I caught up with them in Vegas.
Did you?
Yeah, mate. He'd done the halftime show in Las Vegas. And
this is his bit right now.
This is him right here.
Oh, I can't believe you met Savage. There you go. But, hey, what a special win. And they should be cheer-hooing well after the game, the celebrations. And they deserve that win. They were outstanding.
Hey, guys, it's Dimitri Waimonga here from the One New Zealand Warriors. You're listening to Neat and Footy.
Yes, it's time for our footy results and news. And speaking of Dimitri, I want to start by the last game of round four in the NRL, a nail biter, and one where it could have went either way last night, where the West Tigers took on the New Zealand Warriors. And I want to give a big shout out to Leka Halasima. Only 19 years old, he came off the bench with Dimitrik, and you know, there was 10 minutes to go in the game. The score's 24-18. He finds himself, so it must have been off a kick return. So he's made his way out so the outside backs can take them carries in the middle. So he's now standing on the wing. All of a sudden, they start to move the ball in their own half. He gets the ball on the sideline. Leka receives it. He's standing on the wing, gets the ball. Now, what most props, remember, he's a prop. He's a middle.
He's not supposed to be.
He's the forward. He's not supposed to be on the wing or receive the ball on the wing. And he's received the ball. Now, most props would make their way back into the middle of the field. Not Leka. Leka backs himself and starts sprinting down the sideline, makes the break, beats the defender, makes the break. Now he's got Jareem Buller, the Tigers fullback, and he has Jack Bird, both chasing him.
Oh, they go right-hand side to a peaky off here to a strong run. Stepping over halfway, Halasima comes back and gets rid of Buller. Gets rid of Jack Bird and will go himself. He almost blows a kiss to the crowd as he slides in to score. Leka Halasima. He is absolutely phenomenal. A big body who can run, and he just bulldozed past Jareem Buller and Jack Bird and scores a potentially game-leveling try here.
They kick the goal, 24-all, and then the Warriors get a penalty in the back end and then kick to win the goal, to win the game 26-24. But, you know, for a 19-year-old, Leka Halasima backs himself, scores the winning try, and it was his first NRL try. So congratulations to Leka and also the Warriors who have won their last three games in a row. But Sammy, round four in the NRL, there were some huge upsets right across the board. You know, we've seen the Sharkies lose. We've seen the Panthers lose. And I don't think anyone's seen this one coming. In a low-scoring, wet-weather footy match, the St. George Illawarra Dragons took down the undefeated Melbourne Storm 14-8. Now, it was the Cook Islander centre, Valentine Holmes, scoring the first try for the Dragons, hitting a nice hole where another new recruit in Clint Gutherson passes a nice ball for Val to score a try.
10 metres out from the line. Ball is going to be played to Damien Cook. He'll work it away left. Out the back to the halfback Ilias. Then Flanagan to Gutherson. Short ball to Val Holmes. Straight past Anderson to score the first try of the game. Crowd on its feet.
Val went on to run 172 metres in 16 carries, but it was the boot that made the difference, kicking two conversions and one penalty goal. Ryan Papenhuyzen scored the only try for the Storm, receiving a beautiful offload from the Tongan back rower Eli Katoa. Sam, at 8-all, it was 15 to go. Eli Katoa looked to have scored for the Storm, catching a nice crossfield kick, but then went to the bunker and they ruled it a knock-on. So,
oh, no way.
There was, you know, Storm had their chances, but the hooker, Jacob Little, he sealed it for the Dragons, scoring from dummy half. And I thought Jaden Saw, he also was very strong for the Dragons, both defence and attack. He made 5 tackle breaks in this game.
Dragons coming off the bye, and just, yeah, Flano's words, you would hate to be one of my team, one of my players. He's really turned it around, and the Dragons have obviously responded to that 12-day training period.
Well, I didn't realise that was actually their first win. They had the bye and they had their two losses, but even their two losses, the Rabbitohs, they just lost that one by one. They should have won that game. That was when Flano had his bit of his fit after the after the game, and then Bulldogs, who were informed they haven't lost the game yet, they lost to them by 8. So, yeah, it's a long season.
Yeah, good signs for him.
Good signs for the Dragons. Now, in my next game, if you're listening to Nijin Footy Fridays, you would have heard me call this one where the North Queensland Cowboys, I tipped that they would win this one, and they ended up getting their first win of the season, defeating the Canberra Raiders at home in Townsville. Raiders got out to an early lead through captain Joseph Tapine scoring under the post, but the Cowboys don't shy away, and through some great skill, Samoan winger Murray Taulangi finishes a nice set play, scoring the Cows' first points.
Played to Robson, passes left, McIntyre gives to Dearden, second man drink water, second man, beautiful cutout pass, Taulangi in untouched in the left corner, and the Cowboys find an answering try.
In the next 10 minutes, the Cowboys halfback Jake Clifford, he scores a double, sending them into the halftime break 16-8. Now PNG flyer Robert Darby, who's also been on our show on Nijan Footy, he scored the first try for the Cowboys in the second half. You know, the Raiders do go on to score two tries, but it's not enough as Tom Dearden seals the game, scoring for the Cows to win it. Yeah, the Cowboys winning this one, 30 points to 20. Just love the way that they move the ball, even out of their own end early in the game. They were shifting the ball in their own half and causing havoc on those edges, especially that left side. And remember, you can hear every NRL game live on ABC Radio Australia. In the Queensland Cup, the PNG Hunters had their first home game of the year this weekend in Port Moresby, and they smashed the Brisbane Tigers 40 points to 6. Doubles to Nima, Max, yes, and Wabo. They play the Tweed Seagulls this weekend on the Gold Coast. And in the New South Wales Jersey Flag, the Cavite Silktails make a back-to-back wins. Yeah, they're
back-to-back. How good.
They beat the Newcastle Knights 24-22 in Singatoka.
One another, boys. Back-to-back wins.
Sam, they didn't win a game last year, and they go on and win two wins in a row, where Seni Velati Vunipola kicked 4 from 4, which was the difference. It means they're now 8th on the ladder as well.
Oh, one another, boys. Great work. And T, I thought last Friday your previews of the games were fantastic, mate, and people should be listening to get some tips off you.
Well, maybe just
for last week, anyway.
If you were listening, you wouldn't have picked the Roosters.
Yeah, I know. I should have gone the Titans. You did say Tino was going to have a massive game, and he certainly did. But speaking of the other tips, where did you have the Bulldogs in your prediction?
Top eight.
Not on top of the ladder at the moment.
Mate, it's only round 4.
Yeah, I know. I'm celebrating early. My dogs, stay on top, boys. Hey,
Critter's still got to go play Origin.
Yeah, there's still a long way to go, and that's the beauty about the NRL. It is a tough competition, and it could look certainly different come the back end of the season, but up the Dogs. We're going to get over to Super Rugby Pacific, and round 7 delivered. It absolutely delivered the goods. Moana Pacifica, Malo Apito, Fafatai Lava, Vinaka Vakalevu, thank you. Take a bow, because that was honestly a world-class performance from them to take down the Crusaders in Christchurch 45-29. T, did you manage to catch the highlights or watch this game?
Mate, I've seen Artie score a try. I also seen your cousin Patrick Pellegrini.
Pellegrini.
He scored a nice try where he probably started it with the, was it crossfield kick?
The long ball, the Harbour Bridge ball to
followed in the middle. Actually, speaking of Patrick, how's he been on the family chat?
He's been very good. He's humble?
Very humble. Because he was wearing glasses in the team song.
But so was all the other players. Nah, our family's been they were very excited, especially when he scored his first try in Super Rugby.
That was his first try?
First try in Super Rugby. So he came on after the game, first one to, you know, usually when you check your phone, he's messaged the group, you know, maybe 10 minutes after or when they get into the sheds, just saying thank you for all the support and love. We got to get onto the Tars next week. So he already understands.
Next job.
But what a performance, eh? Like playing in Christchurch against the Crusaders, it's honestly one of the hardest places to play footy, let alone trying to win a game of footy. And I want to paint the picture before we get into, you know, the actual game of it, why it's so hard to win down there. And I'm speaking from first-hand experience here. Like, it is so tough. They're just rich in history with success, and they produce some of the biggest names in rugby union. Like globally, they produce some of the biggest names. They've won 11 titles, and up until last year, they had won 7 Super Rugby titles in a row. So their expectation is that they win. They win.
You just reminded me of like guys like Dan Carter, Richard McCaw,
Richard Mo'unga. Israel Dagg. Like, the list goes on. Reuben Thorne, Greg Somerville. Oh, mate, just the plethora of talent. And when you go and play in Christchurch, like the change rooms, you would have seen it from the team song. Like, it's just a demountable. Like, it's small. Like, there's not much room. There's no locker. It's just your plastic seats.
Humbling experience.
Real humbling. And it's a long walk from your change room out to the field. And it's greasy. It's cold. The grass is long. Like, it's just not. It's not a comfortable place to play footy at all. And so for the mindset for the Crusaders, it's like when they go there, they're expected to win. Like, in their head, they've won the game already. So for them to go down there, or go to Christchurch and put a performance on like that, like, that's, it's going to go down in one of the biggest wins in their history for sure. And what I love about this as well is the fact that, having a look, I'll just give you an example of two other teams. The Western Force, they've been in the competition for nearly 20 years and they've only had a draw against the Crusaders in Christchurch, and that they haven't won in 20 years. The Auckland Blues, as we spoke about just a bit earlier, up until a few years ago, back in April 2022, that's when they got their first ever win in Christchurch. So it nearly took them 20 years.
2022 was the first time that the Blues ever won in Christchurch. Wow.
So that's...
And the Force are yet to beat them.
Beat them. And they wouldn't be the only ones there, but I just thought I'd give those two examples. And Moana, they've made history. They didn't only win the game, they've scored the most points by any away team in Christchurch against the Crusaders. So in the history. So that includes when the British and Irish Lions played down there as well. So what a mammoth win for Moana Pacifica. And I feel like that's just really united the team, united the Pacific fans, because that's such a tough effort and it was such a classy win and they deserved it in the way that they played. So we talked about with Toto on Friday, and we heard through the Crusaders camp and what we spoke about, they wanted to start fast. They wanted to get a good start because that's where they felt like they were letting themselves down. They didn't want to chase a game. This time around, they've obviously prepared throughout the week to get a fast start. And we'll talk about, you know, the first couple of minutes of that game. Crusaders, you know, they kicked off. Moana Pacifica, clean exit. Didn't get too much on the kick because it was a deep kickoff. But what I loved about Moana from the line out, because that hasn't been functioning that great, they put pressure on there and they got their defense right straight away. Their fold, only two in the tackle, didn't send any more numbers, so they had numbers on their feet to get line speed, and they were chopping the Crusaders ball carriers as they were coming forward and then just getting them behind the gain line. After a few phases, solid defense, minor counter rucks. They send numbers in, counter ruck, cause a turnover, get it back to Pellegrini, and he boots it from inside his 22, gets it, goes out in the Crusaders 22-meter line to get a 50-22, so like the equivalent of the 40-20. So that was in the first minute of the game, and they were pumped. You could just tell all the bum taps, high fives, getting amongst it, getting up the field. They get a line out, a few phases. Artie Savia, he had one of those games again where he just said, get on my back, boys, we're going. He scores the first try, scores two. So I just think about the way they started in that one. I thought about their preparation. I thought about the key themes, key messages, you know, that they probably would have gone into that game with. And, you know, thinking of probably those two messages. When we played against the Crusaders in Perth back in the day, when we had to probably simplify our game plan, we focused on 2 points around trust. Just trust your teammate. You have to trust that he's going to be there on the inside or the outside. Trust that your teammate's going to do his job. And the other bit was like, don't worry about winning the game. Just win in moments. So if you could win more moments than your opposite number as an individual, hopefully that tallied up, you know, to be in your favor at the end of the game. So those were the two things. And we got the win in Perth when we had that focus. And I honestly believe that's what Moana Pacifica, their focus was about winning moments throughout the game. And honestly, just trusting your teammate to do the job. And I thought that's what got them over the line. They stayed on that. They were relentless with their pressure. And a few players that stood up, Artie Savia, 2 tries, just led by example. Patrick Pellegrini, his kicking game, pass selection, general organisation. Miracle Failangi, again, he was on fire, just kept bending the line. And they
scored a nice try.
And he had to work for that try. And that's what Toto was saying on Friday about their power game. Because when you go against the Crusaders, you know, they don't miss many tackles. They're well prepared. So you're going to have to roll the sleeves up and go through them. And the miracle, like he stood up and did that. And the other two players that did that, I thought, in the centres were Deni Tawala and Patafilo in the centres and wingers Tevita Offa and Solomon Alaimalo. I think they just made metres every time they carried and they were just strong and dominant.
What does this say about the Moana moving forward? You think they make a run for the finals?
It's a good question. I think backing up this performance, making sure that it wasn't just one hot day doesn't make it summer type of saying. I think when they come up against the Waratahs, it's a good opportunity for them to make their statement because the Tars are coming off a heavy loss against the Hurricanes and this is at their home ground as well. So a couple of wins, confidence up. You never know. Hopefully they can.
Is that the Tars home game?
No, that will be played in North Harbour Stadium.
Oh, yep.
So the Tars will have to travel over there. And on the Tars, just so we move on, from Moana Pacifica, Hurricanes, far too good, 57 to 12 in this one. And what I want to do say is make a comment on Joseph Swali'i. He was contained pretty well by the opposite number, Baylen Sullivan. But this is why we need big stars in the game, because the way that Baylen Sullivan played against his opposite number, he just lifted to new levels. He knew his assignment. He knew that. And for Swali'i, I think that's what's going to come at him every time he plays, like in every game.
Yeah, he's going to have that target.
He's going to have that target on his back. And he doesn't, I feel like he doesn't have the same amount of star power around him like he had in league two. We just can't focus on one player. They know if they can shut down Joey, they could probably shut down their whole attack.
Oh, yeah. When he was at the Roosters, you focus on Swali'i, you go, then you're not worried about Manu or Tedesco or every other superstar they got on the field.
Exactly. So that's it's going to be a big challenge for the Tars to bounce back from that game. The Fijian Drua, they had the bye this week, so hopefully they've been listening to Shane Flanagan in the league and maybe they've had some tough sessions because they've got a massive game in Suva against a wounded Crusaders who, you know, don't lose back-to-back often. So they have a big game this weekend. Just have a look at the ladder. The Reds, they're on top of the table for the first time since 2011. Never been there since then. So when they beat the Force in a close one, the Brumbies beat the Highlanders and all four Australian teams are still in the top six. So another big, big week done and dusted in Super Rugby Pacific. And let's get over to Super W. The Waratahs, they beat the Brumbies 36-23. It was 26-23 with 10 minutes to go against the Brumbies. And what I'll say about the Brumbies, I know they didn't win a game in Super W, but they were very competitive through all their performances. Just lost that one. They just lost on the bill to the Drua in Fiji. They had a draw against the Force, just lost to the Reds. So plenty of positives to take from that season. I've got no doubt if it was longer, they would have got their wins along the way. And a big shout out to Sio Kopesi-Balu. She was their best player by far. For the Waratahs in this game, Michael Dublé, as they call it. Have you heard of that one? See, the Michael Dublé?
No.
Scored two tries, Michael Dublé. But anyway,
I know Michael Bublé.
Yeah, that's a bit of a pun. Play on words. This is a commentator thing. Don't worry about it. But Bolhiva for the Waratahs, a front row. She scored two tries. And Sanele from the Brumbies, who's actually American Samoan, lives over in America, but plays for Leinster in the UK. She also scored in that one. Then the Reds, too good over Sarah Nagama's Western Force, 47-10. Not the form you want to have going into their semi-finals. But a shining light for the Force, Bulecki, Fijian winger, she scored a try. And our girl, Sawaso, again, her line break. She's so hard to stop. Made a massive line break and set up one of the tries. Eva Kapani, again, front rowers. These are love when front rowers score tries. She scored a double as well for that one. So that means in the ladder, the Waratahs finished on top. The Reds came second. The Drua third and the Force fourth, with the Brumbies finishing on the bottom of the table in semifinals this weekend, both on Sunday. The Reds take on the Drua at Ballymore in Brisbane, and the Waratahs take on the Force Leichhardt Oval Tee. So predictions, I'll save that till Friday till I see the team list.
Nah, easy. Waratahs beat Force and Reds beat the Drua.
Perfect. I love it. I think you're not wrong there. I don't think you're wrong at all. But I want to see the team list just to make sure that it marries up with what you are saying.
Have you heard from Sarah? How's Sarah Ningama?
She's going well. Yeah. She's actually playing some good footy. She's hitting PBs in the gym. I actually spoke to one of the...
Yeah, do the PBs on the field, mate. Don't worry about the gym.
Can't take the bench press on the footy field. But no, she looks good, very fit. But I know that I gave her some advice, actually. I said, winners have parties, losers have meetings. So make sure if you want to keep winning, you can have your parties. But if you want to lose, you're going to keep having meetings. So they'll be having a long meeting come this way, this time going into their semi-final. But in the shortened format of rugby, go to the sevens. That just finished up in Hong Kong. Fiji in the men's came fourth, losing to Australia on the bell in the third and fourth playoff, 22-21. Heartbreaker for them on the bell when Australia scored. And with Fiji and the men's, they are second on the ladder in the total points tally. So I know they're disappointed when they don't win their competitions or each leg, but they are still sitting in second place. And in the women's, Fiji, impressive tournament. They came fifth, beating Argentina 19-7, and they are now seventh on the ladder. You've got to be in the top eight by the end of the next league in Singapore, which happens this weekend. So hopefully they can stay in there and stay in the main competition. And T, what a wrap-up of rugby league and rugby union. I'm out of breath here. How good.
I can tell you're getting towards the back end of rugby union when there's a lot of news, mate.
There's a lot here compared to in previous times where you're just dominating this space. But nah, I love it.
Great news. Let's get on to our guest of the show, Ash Masters, where you interviewed her during the week.
Hello, Falava. This is Levi Milford from the Samoa Sevens, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
Our next guest, I'm actually very keen for this one because I've been in rugby for a very, very long time. And in all my years, I don't think I've ever come across a professional player who started in the front row, specifically at hooker, and lived out the ultimate front rower's fantasy to be able to break free, play not just in the back row, but also in the back line. So I'm in awe of our next guest. She hails from the beautiful islands of the Cook Islands, Wallaroo, number 117, and current Western Force player. Ash Masters, kia ora ana, welcome to Nation Footy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That is honestly the front row's fantasy, and we're definitely going to get to that on how that all unfolded. But we'll start off with your Cook Island heritage. How much do you know of the motherland back home, villages, and how your family ended up in either New Zealand or in Australia when they came over?
I was actually the only sibling that was born in the Cook Islands. I'm the second youngest, and all my siblings were actually born in Australia. And then they probably just decided to have a holiday back at home, and then I popped up. We shipped back home. We shipped back here to Australia. So we obviously stayed in New Zealand for a bit, and then we came back to Australia. But I've basically been living my whole life in Melbourne.
Popped down in the village, perfect. And what villages are your parents from?
I'm from Arorangi, which is a nice place. If anyone wants to come to the Cook Islands, let me know. We've got a good entertainment. We've got a bus that goes around, and if you've been to the Cook Islands, you know what bus I'm talking about. The party bus.
Nice. The Cook Islands had a party. So did you say, is it Arorangi or Mararangi?
Yeah, Arorangi.
Oh, so the Bears. Arorangi Bears.
Yeah.
Was there was the family back home? Did they play for the Bears?
Yeah, my dad. But honestly, we didn't live there long enough to know all of our family over there. My parents did well to raise us in the culture. But my dad and my mom and dad still put us in the dancing groups without that wasn't really a choice.
I don't know if you
so
can.
It was come through.
I don't know if you can call yourself Cook Island if you can't dance like that. It just seems it's just ingrained in all of you Cook Islanders on how to dance and get down nice and low. I look at my knees and think there's no way I could do that. And bringing that that Cook Island tradition to Melbourne, what was culture like down there with the Cook Island community?
We're actually raised in with a lot of Cook Islanders around us, actually. Like I said, my parents put us into dancing groups. My dad's really heavy on drumming and the whole dancing cultural part of Cook Island. So, we didn't really have a choice. We had to go. We had to dance. And if you were playing up while you're practicing, you'd know it because you'd feel the stick fly. And those sticks aren't light either. They're heavy. And if you get the heavy end, clocked. Yeah, like you learn fast, like just dance, smile and dance. And imagine trying to dance while you're crying and smile.
And smile.
And you're always like, you know, you're crying and they're like, smile. And you're like, I'm trying.
Yeah, I love those stories. They're honestly, the best memories when you look back at it now, not so much when you're in the moment, but when you do look back at those memories, are you, I guess, grateful for the fact that you were forced to learn that at a young age, because where you are now, there's more of an appreciation?
Yeah, definitely. And I think now, just obviously in hindsight, you look back and you think, like, how much culture's kind of getting lost, especially with the smaller islands. We try to cherish what we do have. So so just holding on to that cultural piece of, like, music and dance, and also the language, which I know is one thing that's quite baked to my family. It's like, I know, like, me and my brother, we went to classes, like Cook Island classes, just to become, like, a bit more fluent in the language. Because obviously you move, like, we were in Cook Islands and you can speak and understand, and then you come back to Australia where the language is predominantly English, so you tend to lose a bit of that. So just trying to hold on to those things. But, yeah, my dad does well to teach the kids anyway. It's usually, like, bad words, but you know what he's on about.
It's always the case, isn't it?
Yeah,
but, So you've mentioned your dad a couple of times. What was he like with your upbringing, especially around sport? Because we are going to get into the footy chat, but what was he like around, you know, sport in the family, rugby league, rugby union?
Yeah, he played rugby himself. My mum played netball quite a bit, and but obviously I grew up with boys, so naturally I was taken to the rugby training anyway. But we all played rugby together. He was also our coach too. So
you're smiling and crying at dance practice and at footy training as well.
exactly. There's no escaping it. So there's hidings in anywhere you go.
I'm really picking up what you're putting down here. There's a lot of venting around how many times you got to hide in as a kid. So
clearly we're the good kids.
We shouldn't be laughing about this, but here we are. It's just it's
so natural, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, him being your coach, I've actually played with one of your brothers, Juddy, playing with your brothers and other boys. You know, what was his method around you being a girl playing, but you just playing amongst the boys as well?
He didn't care. He didn't look at me twice. There was no feeling sorry for you. It's like, you want to play? Play. If you cry, you cry. It was basically harden up, shut up kind of thing. So, there's no difference in terms of that, but I guess it's helped to steer my career, I guess, and where I am.
Nice. And, again, let's talk about your positions. Were you always – you're playing seven, so I'm assuming maybe you went in the front row as a sevens player, but like, how did your – I guess your first position of being a hooker come about? And then we'll talk about the transitions after that.
I actually didn't start as a hooker. I actually played in the backs. When I first moved when I transitioned into women's rugby, I was 15, actually. I was 15 in the back. It was probably my first game with the women's, and I was young. I was still in school, and they were like, well, let's plop her somewhere. So they just plopped me at the back, and then I transitioned to anywhere in the backs. So naturally you go play centres and tens and things like that. But when I first went to Wallaroos, I debuted as a number nine.
Really?
Yeah, but the Nationals before that, I was actually playing seven. I was like playing in the back row. So I actually thought that I was getting selected as a forward. But then I went to camp and I was so confused. The coach at the time, Paul Varell, he told me, he's like, oh, just get you over here. It was very blasé, in my opinion. It was very blasé.
It is. It's not a position where, hey, just go in here and fill in. Like, you're nine, you touch the ball the most out of anybody in the game.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It was really blasé. He was just telling me, like, oh, come here and pass the ball. And I was like, okay. Well, no one actually told me that that's what I was going to be playing. So I think I was like, so do I train here today? And then in the afternoon session, I'll go to the forwards. And he was kind of like, yeah, you can if you want. And I was like, okay. So I did both. And then I don't know, maybe I can't remember, but at one stage, I probably clarified that, look, you're going to be playing nine. And then I was like, ah, okay, sure. I just started playing nine and I debuted at nine. But I was titled utility because I could play any. So, yeah, predominantly at the start I was a back, and then I took a bit of time off, and naturally, as you do, you just live your life because sport had been my whole life for a lot of my early years. Like so netball,
how far back are we going here with that debut, and who was it against and with that time frame?
I debuted against New Zealand for the Wallaroos. I think it was 2014.
Yeah,
2014.
And then you took some time straight after that.
Yeah, I think I took some time off after that just because it was just always sport, and I hadn't been able to live my life really. Like I watched people go and do cool things while I had to go to training. And I think it got to a point there where I was like, oh, I think I just need to enjoy life a bit. So I call it my sabbatical.
So that was your sabbatical. What did you do on your sabbatical?
anything else. Like rugby was still there, I played club and nationals and that, but I didn't really take it seriously as well as I should have. That's when you do anything else. You have a childhood, I guess, that you did, you bloom plate. And I just got beefing. So that's really how I went to the front row. It's just because I just got beefing. So, and I was like, oh, wow. You can still catch pass. Well, they thought that. Like, you can still catch pass, but you're beefing. So go to the front row. So I was like, okay, sure.
Sweet. That's how it happens. Okay. You've come back, as you said, you're beefing. You've come back in the front row. What was it like coming back in and knowing that, okay, I'm learning a new position? Being a hooker, because that's a specialist role, or in the front row, no one really wants to go in there. You just end up there because of your shape. But yeah, what was that like?
Really different. I think like it was a bit of a challenge because actually at first I was quite reluctant to do it. But I spoke to the coach at the time, and he's like, "Look, we just need like some sort of ball playing player inside in the front row." And at hooker, which is like a new perspective, I guess, to the game rather than, you know, your typical front rowers, they just run it straight. So I think when he alluded to that type of idea, I was like, okay, sure. And then I think the biggest challenge, as other hookers would know, is the throwing. And because I was really new to it and I hadn't really given it a crack before, I didn't realise that passing over your head and passing sideways would be so challenging, yes, even though they're quite the same thing. So, and then it's trying to do that while you're blowing. You've done like a few runs and now you've got to go throw the ball. And then you've got to go do scrumming. And then I was like, oh, it was just a massive eye changer, I guess, at the start. But I've always been a person that would step up to a challenge. So that was kind of interesting for me because it was new. Not something I knew about all the time. So I was like, yeah, why not? Let's give it a crack.
I love that. And it just seems that, like, you know, watching your career from afar, it just looks like that you are someone that just has a crack and can decide because you've played multiple positions. Yeah, it must be music to ears when you went back to the back row, then in the centres around that. But you spent a lot of your time down in Melbourne playing for the Melbourne Rebels. Unfortunately, they're no longer here anymore. But what was your experience like playing in Super W and your family? What was it like having their support as well?
Oh, I love Melbourne. Like, Melbourne's always going to be home for me. Like I've said this before, is that I owe a lot of my career to the people in Melbourne and to those who like came before me or those who even took me to trainings when I had like no car or something like that. Yeah, I've got a massive soft spot for Melbourne, and regardless of whether we have a Super W team or not, there's still talent in the state, which is like kind of frustrating because I see these players and I know that they can do so much, but they don't get the look that they get or that other states probably get. So, yeah, that's a bit sad. So probably why I've always stuck with Melbourne because I can see there's so much potential. They just don't get the limelight that they deserve. Probably, yeah, the last two years at Rebels, I had the privilege of captaining, and those are probably my favourite years, I guess. Not to say the others weren't, but that was probably one of the ones where probably because I was a bit more experienced and I had a bit more to give. So, yeah, those were really fun, I guess.
We spoke to Melanie Kawa, I think it was last year, and she spoke about that victory your team had in Melbourne and what it meant to her when she was interviewed after the game. You know, what was, you know, to be able to have that victory there, knowing full what was happening. Yeah, what was it? What were the emotions for yourself going through all of that, the highs and the lows, knowing that your team's not going to be there anymore, but you're going to thank them for everything that that you've achieved so far? They've been a big part of your career.
You mean the one against Fijiana?
Fijian Drua.
Yeah, that was pretty cool because I think there was a bit of a building block towards that. Obviously, we thought that we would get a payout earlier, and it was a little bit difficult because we saw that we had a lot of potential in that year. Obviously, JR had gone and recruited quite a bit overseas prior to the season starting, and we brought a bit of experience there to help elevate the team. But it just felt like it was so close to a win, and then we lost it when we played Reds. So I think going into a draw, there was like, I don't know, it felt like a massive confidence shift in our team before the game even kicked off, just knowing that like we're going to come out winning or something like that. You know, it felt like a really good day to play footy. Obviously, coming off and finishing off our season, we didn't make it to semis, but what we saw there is that had we had gone one more round, like I think we would have given it a good crack in the season. But to finish on a high against one of the top teams in the Super W competition, I don't know, I guess it was bittersweet, but it was like a relief. And I think it just was a reward to how our season went. Like, regardless of wins and losses, what happens outside of those games, like at trainings, off-field and on-field, it was a really big building block. And I think our team just got on so well that was just like the cherry on top, I guess, to finish off the good year and the good season. And obviously sad that we didn't get to keep carrying on the team with the decision that was made, but it was pretty fun though.
This, I've got no doubt that would have been a bittersweet moment, but then you've had to make the decision again to move. You're over at the Western Force. I spent a lot of time over there. It's a beautiful spot. How has the transition been and the season for yourself unfolded so far?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed being here, actually. The weather is obviously one that you need to adapt to. Like, I struggled at the start, that's for sure. Yeah, I struggled at the start. Like, in January, it was peak heat. So we were training in the 40s, and I was like, surely it's not like this all the time. I'm so used to Melbourne changing, and this was like all the time. So me and the aircon were best friends. but it's so nice here. Obviously, the temperature's gone down to a bearable heat on most days. But the team's been really cool. I think my first day in HQ was probably the day I started learning new things. And for me, that's after being in rugby for so long, things tend to feel like, oh, you're doing the same thing over and over again. But I think from day one, when I started learning new things, I was just hooked because I just love learning. And it was like a new perspective to footy. So, yeah, that's really how it's been around here. It's like every day, it doesn't feel like a job, you know. It doesn't feel like, bugger, my back's broken, I won't go training. But you go there because everyone's got good giggles at training, and I've really enjoyed being here.
What about, you to speak of some of those characters, you have Sarah Nagama there, Cecilia Smith, Alana Sikometi, just to name a few. Yeah, the vibe amongst the group, a new team coming together. How's your leadership and your skills, you know, help gel that team together? Because everyone's travelled from either the East Coast or come from somewhere else.
Yeah, they've obviously recruited quite a bit of new faces from the East out to the West. I wouldn't say, like, you naturally do what you do. In my opinion, I just naturally do what I would do. I wouldn't say, like, leading anything or doing a leadership role kind of thing. Because to me, I feel like I'm new here. This is a new home for me. Like, there's been pioneers here already who have been paving the way over here on the west. So for me to come here is a privilege, and I was just a bit more observant and just like watching how things happen here. And obviously when you need to speak up, you speak up, but they've been doing good things prior to me even coming here. So for us, I can't speak for everyone else, but for me, I've just really enjoyed the experience coming here and watching how things are done on the West. And it seems so familiar too, because I guess we can relate in certain ways in Melbourne and how things were done then. Obviously, we probably both have the same, like, Rebels and Western Force women's teams both have the same, I don't know how you say it, but basically we used to joke around saying that like with me and myself and Trillian, we used to joke around about saying the battle of the clash at the bottom of the ladder. So
I know what you mean with the humble battlers. Hey, battlers. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, and we were just always like, we were ready to turn the ladder upside down, basically. Yeah. So we're like, yeah, one year. That's what it feels like here, is that's starting to turn, especially with the players that we have here, unique players. And that's not to say, that's not even mentioning the girls that have come across from the east side. That's to talk about the girls that are currently from the west. Like, there's so much talent here. There's so much potential here. So if we can just shine, like I said, we can shine light on that. Like, they're doing it themselves. They're so good in their own way. So, yeah, you'd be shocked.
Oh, nice. And thanks for referring to me as well for someone that paved the way over there. I appreciate that. Said no one ever. But anyway, we'll quickly get to your, before we wrap things up, just around your Wallaroos, you know, your experience there. Yeah, putting on that gold jersey, knowing that you've had some, you know, certain points along the way where Cook Island Heritage, you know, you had your little sabbatical and you've come back into the fold. You know, how do you sum up your journey so far, and are you proud of how it's all unfolded? Still plenty to go, by the way. I'm not saying you're finishing up.
Yeah. Are you trying to retire?
No, I'm definitely not doing that.
I've not really thought about it that far, I think. I've just enjoyed the journey. Obviously, there's things that you aim for. There's World Cups that people look towards. But I think lately I've just really wanted to branch out quite a bit and see what footy's like elsewhere, hence why I played overseas and then come back here and playing on the west side. There's opportunities to play in other countries, but I think I've just really wanted to broaden my perspective on footy, I guess, as well as enjoying life at the same time, because as I mentioned, like, trying to find a balance between one or the other sometimes can get a bit obscured or a bit hard to do. So, for example, like playing in France and being able to see how they live life over there, that's been a cool eye-opener for me. But then also coming down to the West and just being surrounded by new people, good characters, and that's been cool too. Look, we've got a long way to go. I don't look too far ahead. Like, I know that there are goals ahead, but I just try to remember what I need to do the next day, and then just remember that we've got a game on the weekend. So that's as far as I get. And honestly, at the moment, it's just like, yeah, day at a time.
It is like today. You are where your feet are. That's what everyone keeps saying. But finally, putting the Cooks on the map, you know, in the rugby union space, what you're doing, you're a trailblazer. I've loved watching your journey. How much does it mean to you that's where the women's space is going? Also, in our Pacifica space as well, there's more and more players like yourself, like Sarah, like Alana, wanting to do this for a career. How do you look at that and see yourself as a massive role model in that space?
Yeah, it's a bit of a title, I guess. But honestly, I just love our Pacific people, and obviously I love my Cook Island people. And I think where I have a platform at the moment, whatever it may be, I love to shine light on our little country. Obviously, it's so small, and sometimes people don't even know where we are. they'll know New Zealand, they'll know Samoa, but to be able to shine some light on our little country, like, I'm blessed. And I know that what I have or what gift I have is not from just anything, right? So any opportunity that I can to shine light on the Cook Islands or Pacific people in general, like, I'm so happy for it. I'm all about it because we're so talented. Our people are so talented in their own right, whether it be in sport, in music, in business. They just are really gifted people. And I guess I'm biased, but I want people to see that. So if I can, then, yeah, obviously I'll say something or I'll give them opportunity wherever I can. So I think it's really cool.
I love that answer. I absolutely love it. And Ash Masters, thank you so much for joining us on Nijin Footy. I love the way you go about your business, and hopefully you can bring the Western Force some silverware this year and turn that ladder upside down. So much love and all the best for the rest of the season.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favourite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the eras to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
In the Fale, Friday afternoons at 3 PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Give me three answers for this one.
Yes, this is our game of categories. 3 points up for grabs each week. We'll cover footy or maybe just anything from the Pacific. The loser at the end of the year has to shout to the other host and both partners a spa day, dinner, you know,
the works,
the full treatment.
The full treatment, pampering, everything.
You're up to ask me the questions, but before we get there, the score is 12-10
to you.
To me.
I should have made this question harder. I didn't look at the score just to bridge the gap a bit because I feel like you're going to get these ones.
No, I'll give you an easy one next week.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it, but you're not going to. But let's get into it. I thought I'd get away from sport. We've done a lot of sport
ones. Oh, about time. I watched all the rugby union over the weekend.
I'm happy you did, my friend. It's about time. But I thought, let me go.
It's only 3 games, I think.
Yeah, I think it was about that. Yeah. Hey, don't forget the sevens as well, if you want to start. But anyway, let's go. Let's go right now. In the islands, right? Our men wear traditional style, yeah, kilts or skirts, yeah? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wrap around a bit of cloth. Can you give me 3 different names for them from across the Pacific? 3 different names.
That is a great question. That is a great, great question. The Fijian is a Sulu.
Yes, it
you know
is.
What? I actually had pulled it out. I was doing a bit of a clean out of my drawers yesterday in our Sulu
from when
Fiji.
We bought them in Fiji last year.
Yes. Still in there, so I was like,
Sulu, perfect.
For the
that's tick.
Special occasion. The Ear Lava Lava.
Yes, for the Samoans. Perfect.
And these, we call them Pareos in Cook Islands. So Pareo.
Yes, the Cook Islands, Pareo. And then I think it's Parero in Tahitian.
Parero, yeah.
And then Tupenu. For the Tongans out there.
That's the one I wouldn't have got.
How good's Tupenu. That? 3. That was easy.
That was a
light
great
work.
Oi,
I thought, you
got
like
you
that?
Next week.
Get
got
me,
got
bro.
Week.
Let me bridge the gap. But that's our time up. That's our time up for today's episode. Make sure you tell your mates about Nijin Footy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website. See you on Friday,
yes,
my friends.
We'll see you on Friday. Ka kite. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.